New Balance recently announced the addition of All-American Cooper Flagg to the NB family, joining Cameron Brink and an elite player roster in the brand's mission of growing the game with the next generation of athletes. In part of New Balance's ongoing commitment to supporting athletes off the court, the Boston-based brand plans to work with Cooper on community initiatives in his home state of Maine. To shop the two-way V5, Hesse Low V2, and all New Balance basketball products, visit newbalance.com today.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Good morning and welcome to episode 72 of the Jaguar Report podcast. My name is Gus Logue, joined as always by my co-host John Shipley. Happy Thanksgiving, John. Today's Friday. How was your day yesterday?
Thanksgiving was yesterday, buddy. Today is Takesgiving. It's
Thanksgiving.
Yeah, it's the time. Gather around. Gather around.
The day that just keeps on giving.
Exactly.
All year round, really.
Exactly. Now, I had a good Thanksgiving, buddy. How about you?
It was a good Thanksgiving. I just told you before we started, I had a cousin in town who I hadn't seen in 9 years. So shout out cousin John. But yeah, I had a good time. I was hey cousin John.
You see me weekly.
Yeah, he's Cuzzo John. He's a real cousin.
Cuzzo? Okay. Okay.
Yeah, I was thinking maybe we should start out by ranking our like top three Thanksgiving foods. You down?
Okay.
Do you have a top three?
I'll go turkey, rolls, and then either hash brown or green bean casserole. Like, have you ever had the hash brown casserole from Cracker Barrel?
No, but I have had hash brown casserole before, and it's
a staple in this house.
Yeah.
Right, I'll go ahead and say it. My friend's coming for it. Mac and cheese sucks. If you have mac and cheese on your plate, just go ahead. Throw that right in the dumpster. Take grandma's china. Throw it on the floor. You're disgracing her memory with it. Mac and cheese. It's the Bryce Young of foods. It's tiny. It's ineffective. It's overdrafted. David Tepper likes it for some reason.
I don't fully disagree with you, but I think if it's like done the right way, then it's okay. Like if Bryce Young happened to pan out, then like you're like, all right, well, like it works. I don't know. I had mac and cheese yesterday, and it was like the best side that we had probably. So like, I don't really disagree with you that like mac and cheese isn't a Thanksgiving food, but the mac and cheese I had was really good. So I feel like I got to stick up for it.
I'm as confident in mac and cheese as I am at Bryce Young.
Okay. That's a good way of putting it.
Yeah. I'll go ahead.
My top three that. Stuffing is definitely one. Stuffing with sausage specifically. My roommate said he had stuffing with venison yesterday. I was like, that sounds interesting, but stuffing with sausage. Mashed potatoes, not smashed potatoes.
You like leaving the skin in there?
I was trying to think of like, yeah, no, I usually don't like the skin. Shout out to Taylor Dahl who made a really good smashed potatoes for 10-10 the other week. But usually I like just mashed where there's no skin. It's just, it's like mash it with like the turkey and the gravy and the stuffing.
My dad likes to tell a story of when they were younger, my grandpa did a stuffing with oysters. And I'm like, that sounds horrific. That sounds awful.
Wow. I'm trying to think of my third. I guess I'll go pecan pie. Coffee chowder a little bit. But I was trying to think of like what the best dessert is. Rolls is a good one, though. Rolls is like a pretty underrated side for Thanksgiving.
I enjoyed the Macy's Day Parade turkey yesterday.
So did I.
It was a good reveal
on the television, but I caught some screenshots online. So yeah, I also enjoyed it.
The gift that keeps on giving every year. Every year it looks worse too. I'm like, it's just deteriorating with age, but nonetheless, you know, potential for a big turkey on Sunday, man. Yeah, somebody's gonna look like a turkey. Hey, Jaguars Texans. I mean, we've talked about how big of a game this is. Like 2 weeks, like. It felt like I know you're not a big you know, wrestling guy, but in, like, wrestling, they have stuff called like house shows where like they go to cities and they put on shows for people, but they just, they literally don't put it on TV. So it's like just not as important at all. The Titans was a house show for the Jaguars. And this is the pay-per-view.
There you go. That's a good way of putting it. Yeah. Like you said, we talked a lot about how big this game is. It's always, the next game is always the most important. And that's literally a quote the Jaguars players have said, but this feels like it actually might be the most important, because if the Texans win the game, then both teams will have the same record at 7-5, but the Texans will have the head-to-head tiebreaker at 2-0. So they'll be jumped to first place in the AFC South, and the Jaguars will be, I mean, I'm sure they'll still have a wild card spot as things would fall, but
yeah, they probably would move to the sixth seed. So like right now, obviously Baltimore, Kansas City, Jacksonville, Miami are the four, you know, division leaders. And then you have Cleveland at 7-3 in the fifth seed, Houston at 6-4 in the sixth seed, and Pittsburgh at 6-4 in the seventh seed. I can imagine you can probably swap one of those out for like Buffalo, or probably Pittsburgh. And then those are probably your seven playoff teams, I'd say.
Yeah, that's fair. So we'll see how it irons out. I mean, either way, I feel like the Jaguars are kind of like playing for seeding at this point. But obviously, if they lose this game on Sunday, then they'll kind of have their work cut out for them a lot more.
Yeah. So from the New York Times playoff simulator, the Jaguars' chances to make the playoffs as it stands today is an 89% chance. They have a 7% chance for, you know, the top seed. And if they win this game, that top seed chance jumps up to 12%, and they would have a 96% chance to make the playoffs. So it's basically win this game, and by all intents and purposes, you're in the playoffs. If they lose, they have an 81% chance to make the playoffs. So it's like a 15% chance difference making the playoffs or not. It's still, obviously, 81 is a good chance to make the playoffs, but it definitely does make things, you know, more interesting. But there's absolutely a scenario where the Jaguars lose this game. Fans absolutely tear their insides apart for the next 6 to 7 days about CJ Stroud, Trevor Lawrence, D'Amico Ryans, et cetera. And the Jaguars are still in prime position to make the playoffs regardless.
Right. Yeah. Like the whole conversation for the rest of the year is probably just going to be like, who's the number one team in the South? And then if they win on Sunday, like the conversation could kind of shift to like, oh, are the Jags like real contenders to get the number one seed in the AFC? But
if the Texans win, I think you have to undoubtedly say they're a top team in the South this year. Like, you can't, regardless of what else happens, you can't be swept by a team, in my opinion, and say it especially if the records are similar and really, you know, have a claim above them.
That's fair. All right, well, let's get into it. Jags offense versus Texans defense. Other than seeing whether the team commits red zone turnovers, what are you looking for on Sunday?
Yeah, that's the big thing. Like, you go back and watch the Jaguars week three game against the Texans, like they only scored 17 points, but it wasn't as bad as that would say from like a pure like down to down basis, right? Like, they didn't look like, you know, the Titans last week or the Pittsburgh Steelers a few weeks ago, to where they just couldn't move the ball. They just made so many like stupid mistakes, like over and over. Like, they had a Jamal Agnew fumble, Lawrence pressed at one point and made a poor throw that resulted in interception. They, you know, Lawrence tripped ETN on a 3rd-and-1 run. I don't know if you remember that play. Yeah. They had several 3rd-and-4th-down conversions, 2 or 3 wiped out. Like, they had like a 4th-and-5 that they picked up that was wiped out by a Brandon Sheriff hands to the face. So they literally, everything that could have gone wrong for the offense from like that perspective, like the little things and just consistency wise, did go wrong, which lends you to believe, like, you know, if they can get out of their own way for like once, like when we saw them last week, they finally, you know, got the hell out of their own way against the Titans. And like that very well could have been a different game with the Jaguars, you know, instead of being super efficient in the red zone and everything, if instead they had just turned it over a ton of times like they did against Houston. Now, that game's a perfect example of what the Jaguars offense looks like when they're not, you know, getting the hell out of their own way, you know, like stepping on their exactly. So I don't know. I wasn't optimistic about the Jaguars offense entering last week. I think I only predicted them to score 20 points, but I'm a bit more optimistic this week just because we did finally see a full 60 minutes of them not, you know, tripping all over themselves and vomiting down their bare chest if they try to put together a complete drive.
That's true. I think a big difference in this game versus last is that Zay Jones is going to be active in playing. He played zero snaps in the week three matchup, and Lawrence was fully healthy for that one, but like we kind of saw the Zay Jones effect a little bit last week. I don't know how, like, it feels like he wasn't really like an actual like deep decoy route on like a lot of like Ridley's production. So like you can't really like point to anything he did last week and say like, oh, this is like a clear example of like how Zay is like kind of like lifting up the floor of the offense. But I mean, it is true. He does lift up the floor of the offense. So it'll be interesting to see him this week. Like if they're doing a lot of three wide receiver sets, I think the Jags rank like third or second in 13 personnel usage this year. And so I wonder how much of that is like the fact that they just drafted Strange, extended Engram, and have Luke Farrell, as opposed to like the fact that they were missing Zay Jones. I know that I think Press was saying, maybe it was Doug said in the past week that like the Zay Jones injury has been big because it's like messing around with like kind of like their personnel packages and like their groupings and who they can send out there, which is like obvious, but like it was nice to hear a coach actually say it. So that'll be definitely something to look for this week is like the Zay Jones impact. But honestly, I think even though every week is technically a Kevin Ridley week, I'm expecting more of a Evan Engram and Christian Kirk kind of game out of the passing offense, just because Denzel Perryman, the middle linebacker for the Texans, is out because of a suspension. And then Jimmy Ward, who's a safety, but I think plays like slot nickel for them, hasn't practiced so far this week with a hamstring injury. So I think the middle of the field is going to be a little bit more open this week. So I'd expect Kirk and Engram to profit.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, absolutely fair. You know, honestly, I think like this should be, you know, a week that you see Engram kind of get back on the horse. It's wild that he hasn't scored like a touchdown this year, you know, for like the year that he's having. Like it felt like last week especially, like they were literally just asking him to do all those like sit routes over the middle. Like, come on. He can do more than that. So I'm with you. Like, it definitely feels like eventually like he's due to have like a bigger game than he's, you know, been having. I think like a big reason the Jaguars, you know, did so well passing the ball last week was because of that 12 personnel, you know, leaving a lot of, you know, tight ends and pass protection, a lot of six man pass protection. It's basically what you're seeing Houston like do well on offense, in my opinion, because like you watch like any Texans game and it's basically like two man route, like, you know, concepts, maybe three man route concepts, and a ton of guys in protection, you know, six man, seven man protection. And I think that's what you saw Jacksonville do more of last week, which I think is, you know, definitely encouraging. Right now, Houston leads the league in receptions allowed to tight ends. They are fourth in yards allowed to tight ends, and they are tied for third in touchdowns allowed to tight ends. So, and they're first in targets allowed to tight ends. So it definitely does feel like it should be, you know, an Engram week. Texans defense, they also run a ton of zone defense, you know, as opposed to man defense. And we've talked about it before, like it just feels like Trevor, at least where he's at right now. I'm not sure if this has always been the case, but at least this year, I feel like he's been a better quarterback against zone than against man. Like you kind of saw it a little bit last week. You know, I wonder how much Houston changes their, you know, approach. Cause right now, you know, Houston is, you know, a predominantly, you know, zone team. 68% of their snaps come in, you know, zone coverage as opposed to man coverage. You know, you don't see a lot of straight man, you know, press from them, as you've seen from some defenses that have forced the Jaguars to struggle. But I do wonder if, you know, maybe, I don't know, maybe you see that change this year. I mean, they're, so it's interesting. They're ninth in usage rank in zone coverage and 20th in man coverage rank. But in terms of success rate, they're third in man coverage and 29th in zone coverage. So they deploy a lot of zone. They aren't very good at it. They do a little bit of man and they're much better at it. So I wonder if, even though like D'Amico's entire like defensive like background is, you know, rush four and play zone behind them, is if they take a page out of like, you know, the 49ers and the Chiefs and the Saints playbook and really challenge the Jaguars at the line. Because that was one thing. I felt like you saw the Titans try to do it some last week, but they weren't nearly as consistent in, like, you know, establishing that. And, like, it was clear the Jaguars, like, made them pay for it. Like, you've talked before, like, Calvin Ridley, the longer, like, he gets plays to develop, the better he is. Like, he's just not like a quick hitting type guy. So if you challenge him at the line and throw off that timing, it really throws off his entire game. And I'm interested to see how Houston really attacks them, because you didn't see a lot of that like in week three.
No. I'm interested. Can you pull up like the defensive stats for like man and zone and everything for just third downs, or maybe third and fourth downs? Cause I feel like the Eco's defense is like, at least from what I've heard about it from like different people, is that on early downs, it's like the San Francisco influence is like very apparent. And it's not as much just lineup and play that Gus Bradley likes to do in Indianapolis, but like, it's the cover three San Francisco scheme is what you can expect on early downs. But then D'Amico does a really good job of like getting into exotic looks and just like switching stuff up and playing mind games a little bit with the opposing quarterback on late downs. So I wonder if like, definitely not surprised here that they're a zone heavy team in general, but I wonder if he like ups the man rate a little bit on third downs, or maybe it's just like more different type of coverages.
Yeah, they're definitely increasing some on third downs. It's still mostly a zone. It's 58% to 58% to 31%. So it's still like mostly zone. But it's definitely a lot of man in there. And again, even on late downs, their success like rank is better in man coverage than in zone coverage. So it there's definitely some credence, you know, to your point. And I don't know, like I know the entire talk has been CJ Stroud and the Jaguars defense, etc. Whether Lawrence can figure out Houston's defense to me means just as much. I mean, he's 1-3 against them in his career, and last year scored 6 points against them. Didn't really put up an offensive fireworks in the second game against them. I know it was mostly like a hit the snooze button type of game and just get in there and get the hell out. Obviously, his rookie year didn't, you know, play well against them. And the one constant for them has been, I know it's different schemes, but they've ran zone heavy schemes the entire time. So even though his splits this year have been better against zone than against man, I'm interested to see how Lawrence, you know, approaches this. And I'm interested to see the offensive line too. Like, you know, the Jags coaches this week have said that, you know, they thought, you know, one of the big reasons they lost in week three was that Houston won in the trenches. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously I remember Will Anderson had a really solid game, blocked the kick. Jonathan Greenard's kind of come into his own. I know your guy.
He's and not then, like ever going to be a defensive player of the year, but I'm just saying he's a good player.
I believe I recall you saying he was a defensive player of the year.
Neither of us are ever going to go back and check the tapes.
So last time they played, Will Anderson had 4 pressures and 21.4% win rate. Malik Collins had 4 pressures and 17.4% win rate. And Greenard had 3 pressures and a 14.3% win rate. So obviously all those guys did, you know, plenty of damage against the Jaguars in week three. I kind of feel like Malik Collins, like Will Anderson's like the guy to stop. But I kind of feel like whether they stop Malik Collins will dictate what they do, which is he's a good player, but it's Malik Collins. Like, yeah. It's the same thing as the Zay Jones argument. Like, it shouldn't make sense, but I feel like it's the reality.
I do think like this is the best on paper matchup for Jacksonville's offensive line, like pretty much the entire season, or at least since the last game these two teams played in week three. But even then, like Will Anderson was able to take advantage of Anton Harrison probably a little bit easier than I would expect him to be able to on Sunday, just because it was Anton's third ever NFL game as opposed to 11th ever or whatever it is. And that actually makes a decent difference. And Anton hasn't been like a lockdown guy since the bye or like in the past month or anything like that, but he's definitely cleaned up his act a little bit compared to the first month. And then like the interior of the offensive line is really where the Jags get in trouble. And as you said, like Malik Collins is like the scariest guy on the interior for the Texans after like the murderer's row of like Jeffrey Simmons, Javon Hargreave, et cetera, that the Jags have been facing. So they did get a lot of pressure in week three. But again, like on paper, I think this is a matchup that the Jags should be able to handle.
I know you mentioned it, you know, a little bit, but we obviously expect this to be an Evan Engram week. But Zay Jones, do we see in him? Because he's one of the biggest stories of their year because he's missed, you know, so much time and everybody has talked ad nauseum about his impact. Gus, in four games, he has 12 catches for 98 yards.
He did look really good in week one. I feel like was the touchdown his only catch?
No, he did not.
He had one really good play in week one. The touchdown was pretty nice.
In week one, he caught 5 passes on 7 targets for 55 yards and a touchdown.
But okay, so this is the entire thing, is that like you're correct, and like Zay Jones is like shouldn't be this important, and it's like we've gotten like wrapped up in talking about him every podcast, but like he's a viable, like playable NFL wide receiver, and the other guys that the Jaguars have on the roster are not. It's just that like it, like Zay Jones isn't an incredible receiver, but he's good enough, and like just the difference between Zay Jones and Elijah Cooks or Tim Jones or Jamal Agnew is like a significant difference, and it limits like what the Jaguars are able to do. So
is it a big deal to you that they didn't have him in week three? Like he didn't play the first time these two teams played.
Nah, like week three, like there was so much that went wrong. Like if you were like, oh, what if Zay Jones had played? I'd be like, probably the exact same thing would have happened. I think like the Zay Jones thing is more of like a reason to like explain why the Jags have been underwhelming on offense for the entire season. But like he's not so important that you can like go back to pinpoint like one game or one like half of a game and say like, oh, this is the reason that they lost or this is the reason.
Fair enough. And then like one thing I feel like gets lost from that week three game is it's one of the few games this year the Jaguars ran the ball well. Like they're like I know ETN's had a really good season in terms of explosive plays and touchdowns, but they legitimately they simply have not been a good team rushing this year. They had he had 4.6 yards per carry against them in week three. I don't have it in front of me, but I would imagine that's one of his, you know, more efficient overall games. How important is it to you, to them, to try to, like, my thinking is they're in trouble if they go into this game thinking this has to be a shootout between Lawrence and Stroud. You know, like, I think they have to lean on the run some, one, to try to get it going because it's obviously a huge part of the offense, and two, to help protect the passing game some like last week because again, despite what the nerds say, you don't need to be good at running the ball, you know, for play action, you know, to work. I actually don't know if that's a nerd take or not.
I think the nerd take is that, like, you don't need to run play action in order for it to succeed.
Oh, you don't need to run the ball to run play action. That's what their take is. Yeah, no, you do. You absolutely do.
The correct take is that you do need to run the ball, but you don't need to do it, like, super well. That's what you're saying.
And that's what the Jags showed last week. Like, you go back and watch the All-22. Like, that first Kirk catch on their first touchdown drive off of play action, Elijah Molden was a slot corner. He was completely in no man's land and because of, you know, the play action. And so I think sticking with that is probably one of the bigger and maybe, like, undersold keys to this game.
I think so, too. And, again, like, on paper, it should be a good matchup for the Jaguars. Like, ETN had some pretty nice success back in week three. The Texans are missing Denzel Perryman. I forget who their other starting linebacker is, like Blake Cashman or something.
Yeah, Blake. But the dude who almost got beat by Ridley for a touchdown on like the third play.
Yeah, he has actually turned into a pretty solid player. But then their like Henry Toto or whatever from Alabama, their other young linebacker, is like not great. And he's like just the kind of guy that teams would kind of like put their microscope on and just like target him on defense. So
dang, why
need to like establish the run a little bit. And I think it's like not correct to say that like the Jaguars were like resting ETN to use him for this week.
But, oh no, they weren't.
No. But I think that ETN will get like more snaps and more work this week than he did last week.
Yeah. That's fair. That's fair. Does Christian Harris not do anything for them?
Guess not. I feel like he's like a two-down thumper kind of guy.
I liked him coming out. Let's see. Yeah. He started six games this year. So I don't know. TBD. So, Gus, you got anything else on the offense?
Just when we were talking about Engram, I looked it up, and he has two total targets in the red zone this year and zero within the 10-yard line. So, like,
I think I saw a tweet saying he has the same amount of red zone targets as Brendan Strange this year.
Right. So it's like, it's surprising that he hasn't scored a touchdown, but it's way more surprising that he hasn't really like gotten chances. Cause like, you would think that like he'd like present some kind of like athletic mismatch that the Jags would be able to like take advantage of somewhere in the red zone against like a he's got like a pretty good too.
Not as big of a mismatch as a fade to Christian Kirk.
Which is, as the nerds will say, the worst play in football is a goal line fade.
That one was.
It is funny though how the Jaguars are either like, all right, we're gonna like run it up the gut from under center, or we're gonna go in shotgun, and Lawrence is gonna like fire a ball into the corner of the end zone. That like feels like their red zone plan.
Yeah, I feel like they never have like just a guy like sit at the goal line and like just fall backwards into the end zone.
Yeah. They haven't scored an easy touchdown, other than like they haven't scored an easy red zone touchdown, I feel like.
Yeah. I'm with you.
I think like the way that we're saying like get ETN going because that can like open up the passing game like it did last week, that definitely applies to the red zone as well.
Yeah. I'm with you absolutely. Engram definitely does feel underutilized, and that's not, like I don't know what their red zone like I've been covering this regime for 2 years, and I still don't know what their red zone philosophy is, other than try to get Zay Jones under the goalpost.
Yeah. That's it right there. I think you nailed it.
Yeah, exactly. All right. We're gonna cut for a quick break and we'll be right back to talk about defense. All right, Gus. The fragile state, emotional state of all Jaguars fans everywhere kind of hinge on what the defense does against C.J. Stroud. Yes. If C.J. Stroud has like a 350-yard, 3-touchdown day, I don't think we can wander into the wilderness that is social media for like the next week. I think Jags fans will be ready to do anything, say anything. It'll be testy. He's that good, man. He is that good. It's not hype, you know. Like, he's legitimately been as good as everybody says. And I feel like literally every coach and player says this, so it feels like a cliche, but it's real. Like, the most impressive thing watching him, and again, you go back and watch the week 3 game, literally, like, his process is never rushed. You know, he's never, you know, lacking for composure. He's always very, you know, very, like, keeps things clean, you know, very in control, keeps his eyes downfield. And I would say probably the one thing Trevor doesn't always, you know, do as well. You saw it against the 49ers. You know, he just – that composure in the pocket isn't always as there. That's what Stroud already shows as a rookie. And the numbers are obviously ridiculous. The one thing I will say, you know, he's exploded in terms of touchdowns and passing yardage the last 3 weeks, but the Buccaneers pass defense, one of the worst over the last month or so. The Bengals defense has given up the most explosive plays on defense this year, despite Bigelow. The Cardinals defense, I couldn't name you 3 players on it. So it's not like he's been going against the 85 Bears or anything like that each week, you know. So he's done what he's supposed to, and he's produced against bad defenses. On the flip side, he produced against the Jags defense in week 3. A lot of his yardage, I think almost half of it, came on those 2 miscommunications and coverage to Tank Dell.
Yeah.
But to me, the big part of that game was not the plays that he made, but the fact that the Jaguars literally forced him into 0 mistakes. I can't remember a single ball he put in harm's way that day. And that was behind like a backup offensive line. So to me, that's the biggest thing. Like, the biggest thing for their defense all year has been forcing quarterbacks into mistakes and taking advantage of them. They didn't do that against them in week 3, and that's the one thing I'm not sold that they were going to be able to do this week, just because I'm not sure. I know he threw 3 picks last week, but I'm not sure in general how many mistakes this guy's going to make.
Yeah, I think we were both saying after week 3, like, holy cow, this guy is like more than legit. It was just because like the poise they showed in the pocket, more than anything, like it was like if you like just look at like a 3-point shooter and you don't look at like whether the shot is going in, but you can just like tell how good the form is. And like that was kind of like what it felt like watching CJ, because obviously he did have those two big plays to Tank Dell and like kind of lit up the scoreboard and the stat sheet and all that. But just like the way that he did it and how he looked doing it was extremely impressive. And that's just kind of like what we've seen all season from him. And the Jaguars were kind of like supposed to have gotten him under pressure and supposed to have gotten him to make mistakes back in week three, because the Texans offensive line was pretty beat up at that point. Did Laremy Tunsil even play in that game?
No. I want to say the only guy who played was Shaq Mason, I think.
Okay. So they had one, maybe two of their like typical starting offensive linemen back.
No, they have one.
It was definitely one. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then it like seemed to not really matter. So I think this week is going to be like, I was trying to think like, how do you stop CJ Stroud? Because like I feel like I haven't like seen anything or like heard anything that's like, oh, there's like a way to figure this out. And like I've said before that like elite quarterbacks you just like can't blitz against, and that's like the stratosphere that Stroud has entered. And he's like also just tearing apart man coverage. I think I looked it up, he has 9.5 yards per attempt man, which is tied with Dak Prescott for third best. And but above them are just Tua and Brock Purdy, who are like that's like they're very much a scheme stat is how well they're playing against man coverage. But then like I think Stroud, like Dak is a pretty good comp for Stroud, because like they're both such like great processors, and like
I think it's a great comp.
If you're sending pressure at them, like they have both the mental capacity to like process quickly and then the physical capacity to like get the ball to where it needs to go to be able to beat blitzes more often than not. So what I'm expecting from Mike Caldwell this week is a lot of those looks where like on late downs, they'll walk up a bunch of players to the line of scrimmage and have like seven guys right at the offensive line looking like they're going to blitz. And I feel like what Caldwell's defense has done and what defenses usually should do is like back off against really good quarterbacks, but then get after really bad quarterbacks and like force mistakes out of the bad quarterbacks, but then like let mistakes come to you from the good quarterbacks. So like the most famous example is when the Chiefs lost to the Bengals in the AFC Championship game, and Big Lou, as you just said, he like dropped eight defenders into coverage like pretty much the entire second half. And so Mahomes had like a bunch of time to throw, but he like never really had anywhere to go with the ball. And so I think that's like a similar game plan that you kind of need against Stroud. I mean, obviously you're not going to be dropping eight a lot against any quarterback, even like Mahomes. It like that for was sure. Kind of a one-off playoff game plan, second half adjustment type thing. But like, I think that again, on late downs, like when the Jags run up everyone's line of scrimmage, you're going to see them drop a ton of players into coverage more often than not. And that'll be kind of like the deciding factors, like whether they get enough, the Jags defense runs a lot of Tampa 2, and they do a lot of inverted Tampa 2, and like to get like a quarterback covering where a safety would have been and vice versa to try to mess with the quarterback. So like I'll be looking at like how often they do inverted coverages and like the safety is like rotating after the snap and like what they're kind of doing on the back end, because I think that's going to be a lot more important than like how fast can Trayvon Walker and Josh Allen get to Stroud.
I agree with you. And you go back and, you know, you look at SIS's data for their week three game. The Jags played man coverage 5 times. Houston had an 80% success rate against that. The Jags blitzed 11 times. Houston had a 73% success rate. So it was very clear that, you know, man coverage and blitzing did not work against, you know, Houston the first time around.
Mm-hmm.
The big thing with the Jaguars defense in general is, like you said, like they love to blitz, you know, on, you know, third down. Right now they're 10th overall in the NFL, like in blitz rate. You know, you bring that down to third and fourth down and they're 7th overall. So That's my thing. Like it's part of their DNA, but this week it absolutely shouldn't be. So I'm fascinated to see like if they're stubborn and stick with it, or if they like realize, because again, the big thing is with Houston, they go with so many of these max protections, 6, 7-8 man protection plays, they want you to blitz. You know, yeah. Like they want as few guys in the secondary as possible. So I'm with you. I think the game plan this week for the Jaguars, it's never their game plan, but I think it has to be rush 4 and drop 7. And like I just think that if you blitz, especially on third down, you're more or less playing right in the Houston and CJ Stroud's hands. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm interested to see, is if Caldwell can get away from his identity a little bit, because that's what the good defense coordinators do. You know, they're able to mix it up some and kind of get away from their core philosophies when they absolutely have to. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, he could be, you know, Wink Martindale and just go down, go down with the chips.
Yeah, the hot take I had written down is this is the week Mike Caldwell gets his flowers, because I think like we've been like waiting for it all season. I mean, the Jags defense has dropped off a little bit in the past like month after starting off the season super hot. I think they're still
mainly because of the 49ers game.
Yeah, but like we were, like
they're like top. They're like number 8 in EPA per play now. They were like number 4 before the 49ers debacle.
But even when they were number 4, like it felt like no one nationally was talking about the Jaguars defense or Mike Caldwell. It was like, oh, look, the Jags defense is leading the league in turnovers. But then like that's pretty much the only analysis you were really going to get. And so I think this could be the week that like national people start to finally pay attention to what Mike Caldwell is doing with his unit. Because like I kind of think CJ Stroud is going to throw for 300 regardless. But then if he throws like one touchdown and two picks – and the Titans lose, then like that could be enough just to kind of like get the narrative going. If like CJ Stroud and the Texans like kind of like fall short after playing so well in the past month or 2 months. So like I think Caldwell is going to like be able to mix it up and like be able to do at least like, we'll see how the execution falls. Cause like that was kind of like the, like where the blame went for the week 3 loss, is that like, coaches were like, oh yeah, we were in like decent spots but just didn't execute. So I guess it'll be kind of like that case tomorrow, but I'm confident that like Mike Caldwell will be able to kind of like know what's coming better. Because I'll also add that he was asked this week, and along with a player who it was probably Josh Allen, but it might have been someone else, were asked like, oh, is it like easier to play, or like is there anything to you guys being the first team to play CJ Stroud twice, like for the second time? And yeah, Caldwell was like, yeah, I don't know about like whether the fact that we've faced him before matters too much, but just the fact that there's a lot more tape out there matters. And like I think I said during the offseason that usually it's tougher to face rookie quarterbacks at the beginning of the year than the end of the year, like that's just true. For that reason, is that there's a lot less tape on them. So the Jags were only working with 2 weeks of tape going into week 3 for CJ Stroud and like the Texans offense and how they do things, because they've got a new offensive coordinator. But now they've got over half of a season of film to go through, and I think that'll be a pretty big difference.
I think that's a good point. I got 2 questions for you.
All right.
The first one, will you concede the Damian Pierce point to me?
Yeah. He's hurt right now, so like I don't know if he's been hurt.
He's looked like he's been hurt.
I'll concede it to you.
Okay.
Maybe he bounces back, but it's like, how often do you do like running backs really bounce back?
Devin Singletary, running back 1 in Houston.
It looks like it. Yeah,
it does.
I like his under this week, though. A little sneak peek for the picks.
All right. Second question. Who scores more touchdowns this week, Tank Dell or Tank Bigsby? Yeah, that's my hot take. Tank Bigsby gets into the end zone more than Tank Dell does this week.
Yeah, that's a
lock
good one.
That in. Lock that one in.
I think Tank Dell has like 5 touchdowns in the last 4 games or something like that. So
crazy.
Yeah, he's.
Yeah, how much does he concern you with? Like Tyson hasn't practiced all week, so again, Peterson's saying in the past like 2 years has been, if you don't practice, you don't play. So I firmly like expect Tyson not to play on Sunday at this point. How much does that concern you?
It doesn't concern me as much as it did for the Steelers game, just because we talked about how like hypothetically bigger receivers are a better matchup for Campbell. So like Nico Collins would be a good matchup for Campbell. George Pickens would have been a good matchup for him. But like like I'm with you. Like I'm more worried about Tank Dell than Nico Collins at this point. And like I obviously like Tyson Campbell is gonna help out the defense more against anyone, but like I kinda like I don't think Tyson is like any kind of like Tank Dell stopper. So
you're saying Buster Brown's gonna lock him down is what you're saying.
No, I think Tank is gonna get his regardless, is what I'm saying, regardless of whether Tyson played or not.
I hear you on that. You touched on it a little bit earlier, but just how much does it matter for like the Jaguars to get a consistent pass rush this week? Like, does it really matter against this quarterback?
I think it would be nice late in the game, which is probably the time that you can't really rely on it from the Jags, since like their depth is so like limited and they just don't really have a ton of guys in the rotation.
Yeah.
I mean, they definitely rotate plenty, but it's just not very deep. So, it definitely matters. Pass rush ladder matters less this week than most weeks.
Because I feel like even if you force him off his spot, like that's – you look at some of his big plays in the last couple of weeks, that's when he's been at his best, you know?
Yeah.
Like it's like you said, you almost have to defend him like Mahomes at this point. Like don't blitz and don't let him get out of the pocket.
It is nice, though, that, like, if you do let him get out of the pocket, like, he is very good at, like, keeping his eyes downfield. But – and, like, I wouldn't say to a fault at all, but he, like, rarely runs. And so, like, I think that's, like, one thing that the Jaguars – it's nice that they don't really have to worry about it. It's because, like, Mahomes will, like – as soon as you think, like, everything is covered, then he'll just, like, scramble for 20 yards and, like, make it look like nothing. But, like, Stroud is definitely, like, no Tom Brady or anything in the pocket, but he's maybe, like, not – as mobile as like you might really expect. So
that was a big thing in college too. And I don't know, I kind of feel like maybe that's just Ohio State in general, because like even Fields, for as good of a runner as he is, didn't scramble a lot per se at Ohio State. You know, a lot of it was like
they never needed to.
Yeah, good point. good point. I guess we got anything else on defense?
I don't think so. Ready to get some picks.
All right, we're gonna take a quick break and be right back. All right, Gus, I gave you my Tank take. You've had all week to stew on it. Don't come up with one on the spot. Do you have any hot takes for me? I want you to call D'Amico a fraud. I want you to say Robert Slonick is a Mickey Mouse offensive coordinator. Give me something.
I said I thought my hot take is that Mike Caldwell is going to get national attention.
Go to hell.
It's not as juicy as yours. It's not as juicy as calling someone a fraud, but like
my hot take is that Peter Schrager will say nice things about somebody. Get the hell out of here. Get the hell out of here.
That's so good.
No, you're on take restriction until next episode. No, don't even come up with another one. I hated that. I hated it.
Dang, okay. All right, well, I've got a recycled one where I said a few weeks ago that the winner of Ravens-Jaguars is going to the Super Bowl. I still kind of like that just because we'll see what happens on Sunday, but, like,
I gave you hell for that.
Yeah. The Ravens have been my Super Bowl pick for almost a year now because of you, so I guess I'm going to have you to thank if they end up actually winning.
I don't even know why it bothered me so much.
The only other thing I wrote down is that, like, I don't know I wrote this down to ask you about it. Is it a hot take to say that, like, the NFC is way better than the AFC and the NFC has the three best teams in the NFL?
No, I'd agree with you.
I just remember everyone talking about the AFC this offseason, even like the offseason before when Russ got traded to the Broncos, about how stacked it is. But it's like the quarterbacks in the AFC are stacked, but then, like, we've had Aaron Rodgers, Joe Burrow, Deshaun Watson, Anthony Richardson. I'm sure plenty of other, like, kind of notable quarterback injuries in the AFC. But then the NFC is just made up of, like, those three powerhouse teams of the Niners, Eagles, and Cowboys. Like, easily the best rosters in the NFL.
I'm glad.
So maybe it's not that.
Cowboys from the Lions.
I'm just saying, like, after we spent the past two summers saying, like, oh, the AFC is so good, the AFC is so good. It's like, to me, like, as things stand now, like,
I'm with you.
It's not even close. The NFC is the gauntlet.
Yeah. I'm with you. I think that's a great pick.
For the my takes on Ship though. I thought I was getting hot enough, but I think I need to work on getting juicy enough for it.
Here we go. I got one for you. Would you rather have a player you select with an original pick, like you don't move up for him, who has 4 sacks, or would you rather give up the 12th pick, 33rd pick, a first and a third round pick to get a player with 3 sacks?
What? So I'd rather have Williamson. That's my answer.
You got bulky ball, my friend. You'd rather sell the farm to produce less than Trayvon Walker. That is why you're not in the big boy chair like he is.
Okay.
Don't Google anything. Google can't help you here.
I'm typing away. I'm like Jim Carrey.
Yeah. No. would you rather have 4 sacks and not giving up any picks, or mortgaging your future and having 3 sacks? It's a simple question. Do you love data, basically?
All right. I would rather have
no names attached. I don't want you to bring any of your biases into it. Just tell me.
4 sacks, no touchdowns allowed, and the jersey on my back has Herndon on it. That's what I'm picking.
Oh, well, yeah, obviously. Best pass rusher on the team. he's going to – Trey Herndon is this close to a game-changing strip sack, man. It's coming. This is the week. Okay, another hot take. Okay. Trey Herndon. Trey Herndon, fourth quarter strip sack this week. Get the hell ready. Buckle the hell up. Yeah. Yeah, all right, that's my take, buddy.
Here's my balky ball for you. Would you rather sign a player to a 3-year, $41 million contract and have him score 0 touchdowns? Or would you sign a player to a 1-year, $6 million contract and have him score 5 touchdowns this year?
This feels disingenuous.
Oh, this does. You just got balky balled.
I don't like this game anymore.
I remember I liked Dalton Schultz, and everyone else seemed like, nah, he's like not that good. No one should pay him. Yeah. And then the Texans get him for $6 million. It's like, he's not awesome, but he's serviceable, clearly.
So you'd rather have Will Anderson and Dalton Schultz than Trayvon Walker and Evan Ingram?
I'd rather have Dalton Schultz and Will Anderson than Trey Herndon and Evan Engel.
No, that's no. No, you're not. I'm taking away.
Is that how this works? I thought, don't you love data? It's like one and one.
Can't I'm taking away your takesmanship until next episode. And you also can't balky ball until next episode. You keep it up, you can't have dinner tonight either. All right, I'm going to take the door off your room.
All right. Oh, man. All right. I'm
balky ball responsibly.
In my room. All Saturday,
ball responsibly.
All of Saturday, I'm locking myself in my room and going to work. I'm going to do a darkness retreat just to better my takesmanship.
Then you're going to tear your Achilles after it.
Speaking of darkness retreats, I hate the whole Aaron Rodgers coming back thing. It's so insane to me. Why are you doing this? Like,
I sincerely hope that they still have 4 wins when he comes back. So
and he comes in anyway.
Like, it's like literally like an office plot, like where he has to come back now. I won't shut the hell up about it. Like, he's gonna look like an idiot if he doesn't, dude.
Literally, like, he's pretty obviously doing this, like trying to come back, like not to help the Jets, but just to like prove to everyone, like, yeah, I'm still Aaron Rodgers. Like, I'm still a great athlete. I can do anything. I'm better than everyone. So insane.
I'm 99% sure it is so he can make another comment about modern medical science, but not to get into that's a Thanksgiving table with your relatives conversation.
Oh yeah, we covered that yesterday.
Yeah, Gus, give me your pick of the week. I'm gonna give you mine. Zay Jones under 30 and a half receiving yards. Lock it in, throw away the key. There's no chance.
Yeah, I think he could be like heavily involved and get, I mean, relatively heavily involved and get like 5 targets and 3 catches and still like 11 yards.
I could see him having one of his best games of the year and getting like 25 receiving yards.
Yeah. No, I think that's – I think it's
Don't think that genuinely. The fact that you nodded along was like, yeah, that sounds like a good game from him. That says it all.
You're right. You kind of slipped it under me. I was just about to say that. I don't even know what I was about to say. I was just ready to move on to my next con. I didn't really
You're care. Rolling with it. You, yeah, yeah. 25 yards sounds good.
I was just going to say, like, I think it's pretty – you can't expect him to do anything production-wise until he shows it. And so I think that's a good best bet. My lock of the week was Evan Engram touchdown score because I was like, he hasn't scored one this year. But then, like, the stat that I found where he has two end zone – or two red zone targets, probably zero end zone targets on the season is –
yeah,
a little frightening. So I'm gonna scratch that as my lock of the week, but I'm still gonna suggest Engram anytime touchdown scorer. I'd also like Engram over 46.5 receiving yards.
Yeah,
Chris Kirk over 57.5 receiving yards.
Yeah, me too.
And then Devin Singletary's rushing yards prop isn't up yet. I'm assuming it's because like sportsbooks are waiting to see if Damian Pierce is gonna play or not. But regardless, I like Singletary's rushing under because he's at a over 100 yards in the past two games, but they were against like terrible run defenses. And like the Texans actually ran pretty well against the Jags back in week three, if I remember, but I think like Singletary isn't even going to sniff 50 yards.
I like ETN to score a touchdown too.
And man tank or his take unofficial.
They're both scoring. I didn't say they were going to throw any.
They really, I mean, they should be establishing the run in the red zone, like in general, but yeah, especially the red zone.
I live for a world, like I said, where they score three or four rushing touchdowns in the red zone in one game just to piss everybody off about Trevor's touchdown. It was great last week, like Trevor's four touchdowns. Like I saw somebody, I was like, yeah, but two of them are rushing touchdowns, so I can't brag about those.
They were both like reaching for the pylon.
People
like,
are sick ooh. In the head. People are sick in the head. Man. People are sick in the head. All right, Gus, go ahead. Give me the prediction. Who's winning the ball game?
I'm trying to think of what I wrote down for Big Cat Country. Pretty sure I said 30-24 Jaguars.
We do it oppositely. This is where I set my take for Jaguar Report for on Saturday.
Yeah,
I'm gonna go. God, Jaguars 27, Texans 24. I have no reason to believe the Jaguars win the game other than that they did so many stupid things the first time they played that I think they correct at least half of them and give themselves a ball game. And also, I think there's something to the point that they play better on the road. They play better when people are picking against them. They play better when their backs are against the wall. I believe that. I think they roll out of bed on that morning against the Texans and thought they would show up and win the game.
I agree with all that. And even if I didn't, like, I think they would just be like pissed off from the weekly result alone. And like just week three. And then like just Trevor being 1-4 in his career against the Texans. Cause I think he was 1-3 going into this year. And then they lost week three.
Yeah. It like the, like sounds of the game. I don't know if it was that or the video they put out. Like, you can literally see Trevor, like, saying to Doug immediately after they beat the Titans, like, yeah, I'm 1-4 against the Titans. It's like, forget the Titans. Let's move on.
I think I'll have plenty of motivation. And I think, like having more film on Stroud in the offense is actually a big deal. So, yeah, I thought we were both, like, idiots last week. I was like, we both picked the Niners and like, okay, sure. Like they were coming off of a bye and doing pretty well, but like,
are we I didn't both, pick the Niners.
Are we both, or did we both pick the Jaguars against the Niners? And then last week I was like, are we both idiots for picking the Jaguars again to win this game? And then obviously we know ball. So I think
every time I pick against them this year, they win. Like I picked against them against the damn Atlanta Falcons.
That's true. I feel like that's like the last time you've been,
I think I picked against them against Buffalo. I think every other week, yeah, I've picked them.
There you go.
Gus, you got any other takes for us?
No, I'm just going to go eat a turkey sandwich.
Yeah, go do that. You go do that and think about what you did here today.
I can't have dinner tonight, so I got to make sure I have a big lunch.
Why can't you have dinner tonight?
Because you told me I couldn't.
You're dang right you can. I'm glad you listened. You also sweared, so that's not taller than the swear jar. Yeah.
What did I say? Did I drop the double hockey sticks?
No, you said the pivot off word that I say every other episode. So I want you to think about what you did. I'll consider you being allowed to watch the game on Sunday, and we'll come back Monday with a fresh slate, all right?
All right. I'll work extra hard in the next 24 hours to get my TV privileges back.
That's what I thought. All right. Thank you guys, as always. Jaguar Report Podcast, John Shipley, my co-host, Gus Loeb. We'll be back on Monday to review Jaguars versus Texans Redux. You have been masterclassed, and don't forget it.
New Balance recently announced the addition of All-American Cooper Flagg to the NB family, joining Cameron Brink and an elite player roster in the brand's mission of growing the game with the next generation of athletes. In part of New Balance's ongoing commitment to supporting athletes off the court, the Boston-based brand plans to work with Cooper on community initiatives in his home state of Maine. To shop the two-way V5, Hesse Low V2, and all-new Balance basketball products, visit newbalance.com today.
American Giant makes great clothing, t-shirts, jeans, and more, right here in the U.S., creating jobs in towns and cities across the country. Support America's workers and get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.